On Monday, 4th of April, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, published its final report in the current assessment cycle, titled Climate Change 2022, Mitigation of Climate Change. And this was the third report in this series. The first two reports told us that climate change is here and now, and it's causing huge disruptions to the natural world and to human beings. And this third report tells us that we are still not doing enough to cut greenhouse gas emissions, but it also provides advice on the action we can all take to limit global warming. I really love this tweet from Solitaire Townsend, who is the chief solutionist and co-founder of Futura. And she so aptly broke the report down into three items on Twitter. IPCC 1 was about what f***ed it. IPCC 2 was about exactly how f***ed is it, and IPCC 3 is about how do we unf*** it. So that's the whole podcast episode, that's all you need to know. Only joking. Today on this bonus episode of Easy Being Green, my intention is to break down the latest IPCC report into as bite-sized and digestible chunks as possible. Okay, let's get into it and let's start with what on earth is the IPCC and all of its reports? So the IPCC is the United Nations climate science focused organization. Since 1988, it has been providing governments and policymakers at all levels with scientific information that they can use to develop climate policies. The panel's reports are released every 7 years or so and are a vital element in international climate change negotiations. The IPCC is an organisation of governments that are members of the United Nations or the World Meteorological Organization. And the panel currently has 195 members, but thousands of people from all over the world contribute to its work. It's this level of contribution and review that makes these reports so credible. For reports like the one released this week, IPCC scientists volunteer their time to assess thousands of scientific papers published each year to provide a comprehensive summary of what is known about the drivers of climate change, its impacts and future risks, and how adaptation and mitigation can reduce those risks. Each report is said to be open, transparent, objective, and complete, and it is reviewed by experts and governments all over the world. The IPCC does not conduct its own research, but rather its assessments identify the strength of scientific agreement in different areas and indicates where further research is needed. In the Climate Change 2022 Mitigation of Climate Change report, 18,000 scientific publications were assessed, and 278 authors from 65 countries were involved. And then there is the review process. Climate Change 2022 received more than 59,000 expert and government review comments. So it's not just one person's opinion or one university's study, it's peer-reviewed by hundreds of scientists from all over the world. So what did this latest report from the IPCC tell us? Well, it looks at what we, and by we, I mean corporations, governments, and citizens, can do to limit and prevent the human-caused emissions that cause global warming. The report looks at where our emissions come from, and it examines how, as our global society changed, has changed and is changing over time, so too are our emissions. For example, 42% of all accumulated global greenhouse gas emissions have occurred since 1990. Average annual greenhouse gas emissions over the last 10 years have been the highest in human history. And we are not on track to limit warming to less than 1.5 degrees Celsius. However, there are options to reduce our emissions across all aspects of society, from how we use our power in our homes, to how sustainable our buildings are, to our transport, how we travel, and on and on and on. This report shows how the decisions we make today and in the coming decades will shape our planet's future. And this particular report was, I think, the first one from the IPCC that included a real in-depth assessment of how human behavior, choices, and consumption can contribute to climate change mitigation. So we are very used to the opposite, perhaps, in society and in the media, and looking at reports and articles about how human behavior, choices, and consumption contribute to climate change. But now we are being given some solutions, hurrah! We are being collectively advised on actions we can all take to mitigate climate change. But there is a twist to this. It's not what you normally expect it to be, where it's like, you're to blame, you individual person, you didn't do your recycling this week and that's created climate change. It's a little bit different in this report, and I'll get into that more. So these actions that we can take to mitigate climate change, they span across our culture and lifestyle choices, our transportation, what we buy and what we eat, how we use land for food and energy, and how we use it to remove carbon from the atmosphere, and so on and so on. It also looks at how through financing and investments for net zero economies, through cooperation across borders, through developing effective policies and harnessing technology and innovation, we can build a sustainable future for all. If you watch the launch on YouTube, you'll see the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres speak at the beginning of the launch, and he had some fairly strong words. He said that this report revealed, quote, a litany of broken climate promises by governments and corporations, and he accused them of stoking global warming by clinging to harmful fossil fuels, saying that, quote, we are on track towards an unlivable world and climate disaster, and that, quote, governments and business leaders are saying one thing and doing another, choking our planet with investments in fossil fuels. He also acknowledged that this is happening even though cheaper renewable solutions that provide green jobs, energy security, and greater price stability are available. Okay, that's all the bad news. Perhaps not all of that is much surprise, unfortunately. But before we get into all of that at a slightly deeper level, here is some good news from the report. The average annual rate of growth in emissions has slowed in the last decade because of actions taken, particularly in the energy and industry sectors. However, immediate and deep emissions reductions across all sectors is needed to limit rises to 1.5 degrees Celsius. So this report is about mitigation, and it talks about exactly what we need to do to stay at 1.5 degrees Celsius. So I thought I'd just quickly address why we need to stay at this level. And if you already know this, you can skip forward, but it's important to address where this 1.5 degrees figure comes from. 1.5 degrees maybe doesn't seem significant, especially when we think of when we watch the weather forecast and the temperature fluctuates daily. You know, this week where I am, the temperatures are forecast to range between 11 degrees Celsius and 15 degrees Celsius. But when we talk about 1.5 degrees of global warming, what we're talking about is the increase in the Earth's average temperature, which is measured from a baseline average temperature from when the Industrial Revolution began, so around the mid to late 19th century. This is when society started burning fossil fuels at a much faster rate than before, and that was the beginning of climate change as we know it today. The Earth is already 1.1 degrees Celsius hotter than it was 150 years ago. The thing about this warming is that it isn't equal across the world. Some places are heating up quicker than others, and that has a knock-on effect. For example, the Arctic is warming at twice the rate of the rest of the planet, which results in younger, thinner ice that covers less area than it has in the past. The changes in the ice in these areas have a ripple effect on the food chain and the foundation of the marine ecosystem. Warming temperatures also mean land snow cover is decreasing and river discharge is increasing. And the warming of the Arctic correlates with extreme weather conditions across the rest of the world. An increase in average temperature of above 1.5 degrees will see sea levels rise by 1 to 3 feet by 2100. That's only 78 years away. My dad is older than that. Sorry, Dad. Sea levels rising will see small island nations around the world becoming inhabitable. extreme weather and once in a lifetime storms will become more common, bringing more flooding, hurricanes, and the devastation and destruction that comes with that. At 3 degrees of warming, these storms will become commonplace, which will make much of the currently inhabited world uninhabitable. If you think about some of the major floods of recent times and where they have hit and what devastation and destruction they have caused. Limiting temperature increases to 1.5 degrees Celsius could halve the amount of sea level rise that happens by 2100 compared with what is actually expected. So many people live on the coastline. Just look at Australia as an example of where people live. It's coastlines. So imagine with the sea rising to that extent, what will happen to those coastlines? The knock-on effect of this is, of course, enforced migration caused by extreme weather, displacement of people, devastation and destruction, loss of homes, loss of lives, the list goes on. This latest IPCC report warned that without action, greenhouse gas emissions will proceed to 3 degrees, which is double the current target. Okay, back to what we have to do, according to this report, to stay below or at an average temperature rise of 1.5 degrees Celsius. This is where net zero comes in, because while we can't change what has already happened, once we hit net zero carbon dioxide emissions, and net zero means when we get to a situation when the amount of greenhouse gases going into the atmosphere is balanced by the removal of greenhouse gases from the atmosphere. When we hit that net zero, temperatures will stabilize. That means we can stay below a 1.5 degrees Celsius rise if we mitigate climate change. So to do that, firstly, we need to triple the shift to renewable energy and end funding of coal both abroad and at home. The great thing of many great things about renewable energy, apart from the fact that it's renewable, is that it's already far cheaper than fossil fuels. And with the cost of oil, gas, and electricity skyrocketing, that can only be a good thing. Renewable energy can also be created in many more places around the world, not just where there are oil or gas reserves. So there is a whole host of other political benefits to making the shift to renewable energy. Changes to the energy industry itself can also help with mitigation. Changes such as using low or no carbon energy systems, improving energy efficiency, using alternative fuels such as hydrogen and sustainable biofuels, and decentralizing energy networks. And that means generating energy away from the main grid through energy from waste plants, combined heating and power, district heating and cooling, and using micro renewables. And micro renewables, not only is it hard to say, but they are small scale, non-commercial renewable energy systems, which use zero or low carbon technologies to provide space heating, hot water, and or electricity. So in this report, you'll also see the use of land being covered, and that's for both large scale emissions reductions and for the removal and storage of carbon dioxide. For example, by protecting and restoring natural ecosystems like forests, peatlands, coastal wetlands, savannas, and grasslands, which are huge carbon sinks. Also in this report for the first time, the IPCC included information on demands and services, which explores how people's behaviour and the choices they are offered can help cut emissions by a potential 40 to 70% by 2050. So this includes things that we're very used to hearing, like walking, cycling, electrified transport, reducing air travel, and adapting our houses to be more energy efficient. Of course, systemic changes such as decreasing the cost of public transport, like making it cheaper to take a train than to fly, which seems so simple to me, and improving public transport in general will help support this. The report also acknowledged that some people will require additional housing, energy, and resources for human well-being, and that wealthier individuals have the highest potential to influence reductions as investors, consumers, role models, and professionals. Other areas for mitigation that were listed in the report included using materials more efficiently in industry and reusing, recycling, and minimizing waste, and better urban planning in cities and urban areas. Really recommend spending some time looking through the report and some of the summaries and watching the launch, which does summarize the report, for the IPCC suggestions on actions that can be taken to do all these things. But the overall message to achieve all of this is kind of two directions to go in. There's two big solutions that are needed to achieve this level of climate mitigation. And the first one is investment. Essentially, we need to pour the world's money into climate solutions. We need 3 to 6 times as much as current levels invested in climate solutions by 2030 in order to limit warming below 1.5 to 2 degrees, which can be achieved by responsible investment approaches to emerging market investments. But the main thing is, if we do it now, it will be much less costly than if we wait any longer. The report states that there is sufficient global capital and liquidity to close these investment gaps. So to me, it feels like this is about putting the money in the right places, like renewable energy and new technologies, instead of the wrong places, like fossil fuels and weapons of mass destruction. The second big solution, the second big action we have to take is a group of action, a collective of action. And that is that there must be policy, regulatory, and economic transformation. We've seen how changes in policy and regulations have already proven effective in reducing emissions and achieving systemic change. For effective and ambitious mitigation, coordination across government and society is essential. This means involving everyone in planning, involving everyone in attention to equity and justice, and drawing on Indigenous and local knowledge. So what does this all mean for you and me, for individuals and businesses? What action should we be taking? Well, the simple answer is whatever you can and as much as you can. There is a place for all of us in this climate movement. Apathy will get us nowhere, but collective action can. Take a read through the climate report or watch the launch for a summary. I will link both of these in the show notes, because they include practical, doable actions, big actions and small actions that businesses can take to help mitigate climate change. And as individuals, I think the key takeaway for me from this report, or perhaps mainly from the strong words said by some of the IPCC panel members in the launch of the report, is that our leaders must lead. The rich, powerful, and influential have the most responsibility, resources, and opportunity to influence the reduction of emissions. But that doesn't mean that the rest of us are off the hook. It's up to us to demand change, to vote for the planet, to push those in power to invest in the right areas, to create the right policies and regulations, to transform our economy into one that can be sustainable. I'll wrap up today's episode with a summary that the co-chair of the IPCC Working Group 3, Jim Ski, provided. He said, "We know what to do, we know how to do it, and it's now up to us to take action. The longer we put off action, the bigger the feasibility challenges will be." Thank you for joining me for today's bonus episode of Easy Being Green, Lessons in Sustainable Business for SMEs. I hope this shallow-ish dive into the latest report from the IPCC was helpful. I will link all the resources I used to research this episode in the show notes, as well as the link to the video of the press conference launch of the report, which is well worth a watch if you just want another summary. If you liked this episode, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe or follow this podcast and perhaps give us a 5-star review, as these are the things that help other like-minded people to find us. And don't forget to give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, Meta, TikTok, and Twitter at We Are Earth Co. That's all one word, at We Are Earth Co. Don't miss tomorrow's episode of the show. where I will be talking to the amazing Dr. Jennifer Kuklinski about everything from greenwashing to the meaning of purpose in sustainable business, to what drives her to get out of bed in the morning, and why you should be posting less on social media. Until then, stay collected and don't forget to keep it green.